Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for September 21st, 2009, and on this week's episode, Tom Williams interviews Chicago actor Michael Shannon. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is a Chicago icon, Michael Shannon, whose new show, Mistakes Were Made, is an awesome production at a Red Orchid.
Thank you, Tom.
Tell us how this show came about.
Well, I've collaborated with the writer, Craig Wright, on a couple of other occasions. I first worked with him on a play called Grace, up at the North Light Theater, and that was followed by a play called Lady, which was also at the North Light Theater. Two plays that meant a lot to me. Craig is a very spiritual writer. He has a spiritual background. He was studying to be a pastor at one point, I believe, in seminary, and I like to do work of that ilk. I like to do work that raises very profound philosophical and metaphysical questions, but in a very entertaining and compelling way, not a dry intellectual way. And I feel like that's something Craig is really expert at.
Yes, he is. He does fabulous work. Well, so tell us, give us a little capsule version of what Mistakes Are Made about, what your character is and what the show is about.
Well, in Mistakes Were Made, I play a producer named Felix Artifacts, who has been a producer in New York for quite some time. He's produced a lot of revivals over the years, but now he's got his hands on what he believes will be a revolutionary new play that will shake the foundations of Broadway like nothing it's ever seen. And he's just struggling against all odds to get this play produced. And it's really, in one regard, that simple. You're just watching a producer try and cajole all the different people and personalities required to make a piece of theater happen. He's trying to cajole them to do his bidding.
And it's mostly, you're talking on the phone, right? Felix is talking on the phone.
Phone quite a bit, yes. You never actually see any of the people he's talking to, except briefly you see his receptionist, Esther, but you never see any of the people he's actually wheeling and dealing with.
But what you make happen in this is really intense. I mean, I said in my review, I could actually hear the people in the background just through your eyes and your facial expressions on what they were debating, because things aren't going too well for Felix, are they?
Yeah, well, it's all a matter of perspective, but he does meet a lot of resistance, and I would say that that is possibly one of the themes of the play is how all of us in our lives, when we try to create something, can be met with a great amount of resistance from the world, from other people, and how it's still important to try and create in the face of all that resistance.
Yeah, and his world is collapsing, and just all the dialogue that you had to learn for this was absolutely incredible, because it's basically almost a one-person show, and you have all these mood shifts because he's having all these battles, whether it's the people in Iraq, which is an investment he has, to the trying to get the actor to play the role. I mean, this is a very funny play in one sense, and in another sense you see this guy falling apart.
Yeah, I think it kind of sneaks up on you. Well, again, I find that to be a common theme in Craig's work, or not maybe a theme, but a common element is that I think all of Craig's writing is suffused with a great amount of humor, but ultimately at the end of the play you see characters coming unhinged
Yeah, he develops sort of very strong characters. Yeah.
Yeah, and you see them have a cathartic experience, even though you may have thought all along what you were watching was a comedy. It kind of sneaks up and turns into something else.
How do you prepare for a role like this when you're really not playing off, you know, another actor, another actress? You're kind of playing off the phone.
Well, actually, you mean on a night-to-night basis?
Yeah, yeah.
Before the show, I listened to a lot of music. I think in terms of performing the play, it's a very musical experience. And I don't sing except very briefly, but it's all about kind of rhythm and tone. And music is very helpful to kind of loosen up my brain because I have to get into I have to improvise in a sense. I can't, I'm not going out and trying to do the same thing every night because, the audience is also a huge part of the show, and so every night is different, and I have to be open to being different as well. So I try and loosen my mind up and be prepared to pay attention to what's going on.
Does it help you with the small intimate theater that a Red Orchid has, where you have the audience on two sides and you're literally almost right on top of them?
Yeah, that can be helpful sometimes. It is. It's an experience like no other, I'll tell you that. To have so many people sharing this experience in this small space is very intense. I think some people may even find it a little too intense, but I think if you're in the right frame of mind, it's pretty exhilarating.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's I've seen everything, just about everything that's been out this year. And I think your performance and Greg's writing, I called it a double tour de force.
Oh.
It really was fantastic.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm sure Craig would be very happy to hear that, too. He had a wonderful time. He was actually here during opening week, and he got to come to a lot of the performances.
Yeah, but from what I understand, that Craig gave the play to a Red Orchid because you were involved. And it's kind of a mutual thing that...
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, you know, Red Orchid did The Unseen last year, which was also a phenomenal production.
And, yes, it was.
And I had absolutely nothing to do with it. I have, over the years, told Craig about Red Orchid because it's my company. That's a company I'm part of. It's my family. And I've told him that he could trust us whether I'm involved or not. I don't think I'm the only actor in this ensemble that could do this role. I just, it's something I was very passionate about. I was very drawn to personally.
Yeah, I could see. It's perfect vehicle for you.
Oh,
it really
is.
Thank you. And so let me ask you now, how does an actor who has moved on to film and has done some of the great work you've done in film, and Revolutionary Road was amazing.
Oh,
and congratulations
you.
On getting nominated for the Oscar. Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Yeah. And now you're back in a 75-seat theater, which was your home. What brings you back?
Well, you know, it's hard to sum it up in a very concise manner. I mean... you know, there was a time where I wasn't sure that I would ever come back here again. A theater, particularly a small theater like this, can be a pretty precarious operation, and you're never sure from year to year whether the theater is going to survive at all. So I wasn't even sure that how much longer Red Orchid would be here. But I found last season at the theater to be very inspiring. Even though I'm not living here anymore, I still come back a lot, and I saw all the shows last year, and I got very, very inspired, and I felt like I missed being involved. When I saw The Unseen, when I saw Pump Girl,
really doing tremendous work.
Right. So I guess in a way I got kind of, you know, jealous and wanted to get back involved. I also think, Craig's play, Mistakes Were Made, this is a very it's a risky proposition. There's not a lot of places where you can take risks, really. And
they do here.
They do here.
Yeah, and they nail them. Yeah, they really do.
We never play it safe here ever. And
thank God.
Yeah.
Because that's what theater's about, stretching the boundaries.
I think so. Yeah. I think so, and I think that's probably what draws me back.
Well, you're certainly helping put a Red Orchid on the map. Those of us who follow theater closely know about this place, but you're to be congratulated on getting the word out.
Oh, well, thank you.
Because I understand almost the whole run is sold out. If you
that's
folks
crazy.
Get to a Red Orchid to their website and see if you can get a ticket, because it's only running till the 31st.
October 31st, yeah. Halloween is the...
And you seat about 75 to 80 maybe, right?
Yeah. If you come on Halloween, I'll wear a costume.
Well, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about your background, because, you're an inspiration. One of the things that I think is so interesting is you're not a formally trained actor. You didn't go to college and major in drama.
Mm. No.
And you started acting, at 16, from what I understand? Tell us how you got started.
I kind of fell into it in high school, I think the way a lot of people do. It's kind of like a Venus flytrap, you just kind of get stuck in it. And at the time, I was very, very, what's the word, damaged, young man. And so theater was and I think this is true for most kids that get into it, it's a wonderful outlet for your emotions and your hormones and all these things. So, that's kind of what got me tangled up in it.
And then you helped them find a Red Orchid, is that right?
I hate to take any credit for the actual creation of Red Orchid, because it really was Guy Van Swearingen's baby. I mean, it was his idea. He had a play he wanted to do called The Connection, and he literally built this theater so that he could do that play. And really, one of the main reasons I got involved is because after The Connection closed, he didn't know what to do next.
Okay.
It was as far as he had gotten in his mind. He just knew he wanted to do that play.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a big, this beautiful theater he had built and nothing going on in it. So I said, I have a show I want to do. And he said, well, okay, why not? And that's kind of how it started.
Wow, that's true. And a lot of people don't realize that you won a Jeff Citation in 1992.
Oh, really? Jeez.
You were 18 years old. You were one of the youngest winners ever?
Really?
I don't know if you were the youngest. That I didn't have time to check.
But they always told me I had to refer to it as a recipient. You weren't allowed to call yourself a winner, I guess, because there's multiple, I don't know.
Well, there were at the time. They now, on the non-equity side, they now have just one winner.
But they do?
Yeah, they've changed that. They just, thank God.
Wow.
Yeah, they
thank
just
God.
Changed that in the last year.
Yeah.
But,
that was very exciting. I remember because I was at the ceremony with my friend, Carl. And we were sitting at the bar, and Carl was buying me drinks. and they called my name, and I walked up onto the stage, and Carl turned to the bartender, and he's like, man, you don't understand. This is amazing. That guy's 18 years old.
He's telling the bartender that.
Bartender called the cops. No. But he that was his funny story.
But that's a nice start.
Yeah, it was. And then, I would be loath for anybody to think that it was all polka dots and moonbeams. I mean, I had my dark stretches. Actually, after I finished shooting Revolutionary Road, I didn't work for like 6 months. And I started...
Wow, because I'm looking at your resume for a young guy. It just goes on. Fills the page.
It's hard to believe, but there are some idle stretches, but not too much.
But Tracy Letts certainly had a lot to do with developing,
Tracy,
right?
Definitely. Yeah, Tracy, I owe a lot to Tracy. I've done his plays. They've taken me all over the world, and not all over the world, but...
Several people have asked me to ask you this question.
Mm.
You worked for a year in London.
Mm.
How did an American actor get to work in London for a year with all those, you know, restrictions and work permits?
Well,
and all
you know, it was a case by case basis. Yeah. It was more broken up than that. I mean, basically what happened is we took Killer Joe to Edinburgh and then it moved to London. And, you know, the case you argue with that is that it's an American production. It's been brought to the Edinburgh Festival. You're keeping the original cast from the American production. It's a pretty easy case to argue. At least at that time it was.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there weren't really any.
Because it's tough now to get.
I guess it's gotten harder. But
you're on a level now where you would get it. You know, the star kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You've got enough of a name.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, Equity scares me. It's a very scary organization. I mean, God bless them, but I don't know much about their rules.
Yeah, okay, because that's one I had to ask. And you got to tell us a story about your agent coming, because I know you told Chris Jones about your agent coming to see.
Oh, yeah.
Mistakes are made, and and they generally don't. And he's probably questioning why, after all the films, would you want to go back and work at a 75-seat house?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what his reaction was.
Oh, he was really tickled by it. I mean, it's really sweet, actually, because he's a very kind of high-powered Hollywood agent, and yet he's got a very boyish side to him, and that really brought it out, him seeing the show. Because he's from the Midwest, and he's actually underneath it all. He's a real solid guy, and so it was a lot of fun for me to see him.
Well, I think a lot of agents, film agents, don't get... When you're raised on the stage, you got to come back. I mean, John Mahoney, Gary Sinise, they all come back. Peterson just came back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about money or anything. It's about they need that interaction in live theater.
Yeah. Well, and the writing just tends to be, to me, that's the biggest difference is the writing's just more interesting than theater, by and large.
Yeah. But I also read where, after you did Bug several places, right, besides here.
Yeah.
You took that to New York and then to London, is that right? And then when they made the film, I understand one of the producers wanted to get a, quote, big name to replace you.
Oh, the studio did.
Yeah, but William Friedkin.
Movie,
Friedkin just said, no, we got to have this guy. He's the man.
Yeah, Friedkin really wanted the whole cast from the play, but... he knew that was impossible, so I don't know why he picked me, Agnes is really kind of the most important role, and Ashley did an amazing job.
The quote I read was, he said, you have a certain quality for this part that no one else has. That's quite a compliment.
Yeah, well, I'm a creepy guy. What can I say?
And then Jerry Bruckheimer, Mr. Television Series.
You did
some films with him, huh?
Yeah, I did some of Jerry's films, some big blockbusters. Yeah, those are fun. I mean, those are kind of like, you know, going to an amusement park or something. It's fun. It's a lot of fun, but it's not very stimulating.
Yeah.
Intellectually.
You know, but there's nice paychecks, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great. All right, in the remaining time we have, because I know you have to prepare for a show, tell us what some of the goals or some of the things you want to do in the next few years. You know, where is all this taking you? Are there projects that you have to do?
Well, I actually I just took on a television show that I'm going to be doing, and I'm kind of looking forward to that. It's a medium I haven't really worked with much.
The HBO series, that Broadwalk Empire?
Yeah, this could potentially be a multi-year endeavor, so I'm excited about that.
And HBO,
it's new. It's something I haven't done before, and the idea of trying to sustain a character over a long period of time kind of fascinates me.
Yeah, that would be a challenge.
Yeah, it's just something different, something I haven't done.
And I'm sure you'll be back here in Chicago to do some work, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see, you know. We'll see. Because Kate, my girlfriend, is with Steppenwolf, and we're coming back next summer, actually. Kate's doing a show there. I don't know if I might just be a daddy that time, because... both of us doing a show and having our baby at the same time is proving to be a little stressful.
Yeah, but that's...
It's a beautiful thing. But
yes, it is. Yeah, it is stressful. Yeah. Well, congratulations on the work. And Chicago welcomes you back.
Thank you, Tom.
And we remember you when you were like, you're the inspiration for the young actors that say, could it ever happen to me?
Again, it just takes about 20 years.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people, for the young actors who are striving, you know, to do a TV show, a film, or, you know, Broadway show? Or what advice would you give them?
For me, I think the smartest thing I did is, not the smartest, but the most fortuitous thing I did was working with new writers. Revivals are great and everything, but
new shows,
they have their place. But the reason I am where I am today is because I've always worked with new writers, you know, Tracy, Craig.
Yeah, and you originated in an awful lot of roles, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm able to, you know, open up the published versions of plays and see my name in there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So.
And it gave you a chance to be that character, to put a stamp on that character.
Yeah, yeah, and it, you know, if the production you're doing is a very popular, successful, and you move on to New York or London, then that's a good catapult for
Great.
Your career, I guess.
Well, thank you so much. I just got the end signal. You have to get ready for your show.
All right.
Congratulations on a great career. And folks, don't miss Mistakes Are Made. It's a fantastic show, and you only have till the 31st.
October 31st. Yes,
okay. Sir. Great. Thank you so much. And folks, remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of September 21st, 2009. Congratulations goes to playwright Bruce Norris for being awarded this year's Harold and Mimi Steinberg Charitable Trust. Bruce Norris has strong ties with the Steppenwolf Theater Company, who has premiered most of his works. He will receive $50,000 from the trust and will be noted as a distinguished playwright, joining colleague Tony Kushner, who won last year. Congratulations, Bruce Norris. A Chicago mainstay for the past 40 years has decided to close its doors. This past week, the Apple Tree Theater Company from Highland Park canceled its upcoming season and notified its artists and its students that the theater will no longer continue to operate due to finances. This is a sad day for Chicago, as the company, which has been producing for 26 years and teaching for around 40, and who lost its founder, Eileen Bevers, this past January, tries to find accommodations for its company and its subscribers. It was a heartbreaking decision for the board of directors to make, who wanted to do the right for their core believers who've been with them all the way. You will be missed, Apple Tree Theater Company. The artistic director of the Bailiwick Repertory Theater, David Zack, will be stepping down from the company following after more than 20 years as being the artistic director. He will be replaced by Jeff-nominated Kevin Mays, who is taking on the role of executive director of the 27-year-old company. His primary goal will be to stabilize the company's finances and launch their upcoming season, which has yet to be announced. Last year, the Bailiwick left their longtime home on Belmont Avenue and became an itinerant company. Theatre Wit has taken over the Belmont space and is building three new stages, opening in the spring of 2010. Benno Nelson brings us another article in his Full Store Frontal series. This edition focuses on the plagiarists and who they are exactly. He gets quotes from the company members and hones in on the ideal plagiarist show. So be sure to check out Benno's latest article and follow along with the full series at theaterinchicago.com. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Michael Shannon for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.